a very pleasant good day to you. Good morning, good day, good evening, good afternoon, whatever it might be. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh Arnold, who will soon be here, we trust. Our producer and engineer is Bill Proposky, and this is Trending Now. This is a program that we like to broadcast here most Fridays on msonewsports.com, and it's a sort of a conglomeration, a mixed, a melting pot, a potpourri of as many different kinds of interviewees that we can get. Josh lines them up, and he's got many, many guests lined up for the next couple of weeks and beyond, as a matter of fact. Now, today, checking Josh's schedule, and as I said, he should be here along pretty soon, he has several interesting guests lined up, including Martha Wood, who is the project manager for Gloucester Arts and Cultural Initiative. The Gloucester Arts and Culture, not cultural, but Gloucester Arts and Culture Initiative. Martha Wood is the project manager, and she will be our first guest in just a couple of minutes. Second guest is a person you've heard many times here on a couple of iterations of Trending Now, the first one being the Rotary Radio Hour. And that is with Joe Cellino, who is the president of the Gloucester City Council. And Mr. Cellino has been on board for many years, and he will be talking with Josh as our second guest. Third guest this morning is Mark Whitmore, who is the executive director of the North Shore Career Center. And again, I'll have links to these sites on the website here probably at the end of the interview and before we go on demand. But again, those are Josh's guests for today. Martha Wood, project manager, Gloucester Arts and Culture Initiative, Joe Cellino, president of the Gloucester City Council, and Mark Whitmore, who is the executive director of North Shore Career Center. So we'll have all that and more. Josh has arrived just as I speak, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with our first guest, so stay with us. This is MSO News Sports, and this is Trending Now on MSO News Sports. There we go. All right, be right back.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Looking for a reliable place to produce your team's uniforms or your business's corporate apparel? Then Sarkisian Sportswear is the place for you. Conveniently located on Route 1 South in Peabody, Mass., Sarkisian Sportswear handles all aspects of your needs, from price quoting to providing visual proofs to production completion. Visit our website, SarkisianSports.com, to view our monthly specials, vendor catalogs, and to request a quote. Remember, Sarkisian Sportswear is the place to go.
Josh Arnold, and our first guest is Martha Wood. Martha, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh.
Pleasure
to be here.
Well, we usually start out and have folks tell us a little bit about themselves, their bio and so forth, so maybe you could start there. We can talk a little bit about the work you're doing with the Gloucester Arts and Cultural Initiative.
Sure. Well, my background is I grew up in New Hampshire in a small town and very involved with the community. I was, sort of a jock, involved with various sports teams, hung out in the art room and found a community there in school. But in college, I went and I studied government, very much thinking I'd probably be involved with nonprofits or local governance as when I grew up, and ended up heading on to get an MBA, which was sort of outside of the scope of what I'd been thinking. But it was really with the goal of trying to bring good business practices to nonprofits in the future, and that's exactly what I ended up doing career-wise, working as a consultant in a wide variety of ways to nonprofit organizations. I found myself with my family living in Canada for 9 years, doing a lot of work with the arts in Alberta, and then moved back to the North Shore where my husband had grown up in Gloucester. So I'd always had a connection with Gloucester here through him, and brought up my three daughters through the schools on the North Shore. And at that time, I did drop being a, you know, professional worker and was home with kids, but very involved on school committees, and started up a little jewelry making business and jumped back into the arts. And the Gloucester Arts and Culture Initiative has really drawn me back into sort of more of my professional career in an interesting way, in terms of combining the business side of things with the artistic side of me. So
great. Well, that's good. Tell us about the Gloucester Arts and Cultural Initiative.
Yes. Well, the Massachusetts Cultural Council has been, you know, very involved with Gloucester over the past 15, 16 years. Its involvement has increased. And a few years ago, the City of Gloucester received the Mass Cultural Council's Commonwealth Award. And the a few people that were at the award ceremony got to talking and saying, well, what's the next natural step for Gloucester in terms of increasing its ability to tap into the creative economy and really connect communities through the arts? And through that, they wrote an application for a Mass Cultural Council Adams grant. And the Gloucester Arts and Culture Initiative is a result of that. We have received a two-year, $45,000 grant from the Massachusetts Cultural Council. And there's a requirement for matching funds that need to be raised from that. But it's provided the City of Gloucester with an opportunity to get a step up in terms of being able to try and achieve a lot of the goals which were made for the arts community, and achieving things for the cultural community which were stated in the Gloucester Plan 2001, and that which a lot of the goals were still and remain to be met. So the Gloucester Cultural Plan, you know, 2001 is a guidepost, and the MCC and a lot of the resources it provides in terms of knowledge about the cultural economy are guiding us as well.
Great. And getting into some of the work, getting ahead of myself, but the organization that you belong to, the initiative, is works outside of government, although its mandates are drawn from the community development plan, as you mentioned. And there's apparently an agenda or desire to be part of the city government. Is that on track to happen? And if not, what does that do to the initiative going forward?
Well, Josh, that's exactly the question that we're facing right now. It's been a very interesting progression of just sort of, you know, assessing what is the current situation and you know, dealing with it as best we can. Initially, when the grant was written, there was an assumption that the matching funds would be provided by the City of Gloucester, and that, you know, as you know, is the nature of government, things change, and, you know, there were pressures on the city in terms of other needs for financing, and the city did, you know, realize that they did not have the funds to commit at that time. And so the planning group basically decided that they still wanted to try and achieve those goals, but with the help of the city government, but without the funding. And the city has been fantastic. I've, you know, had regular meetings with the mayor. I work very closely with the mayor's committee for the arts. In fact, there are a couple members on our steering committee. And the city's, you know, tried to provide as many resources in terms of, you know, space for meetings and connecting me with people and whatnot as they can. But realistically, in terms of finding funding, we really have had to look outside of the city.
Okay. And so looking at some of the programming that you're engaging, I looked at your website, and what is Mosaic Gloucester?
Well, it is basically a fantastic example of something which is called, amongst the arts community, creative placemaking. And basically, a local Gloucester artist, Leslie Davison, is working on a project which will, she plans to go out into a wide range of places in the Gloucester community and speak with various people about their Gloucester and have them tell her about Gloucester and what it means to them. She will then take those stories and have it inform imagery, which she will use to design a large mural, which will hang at on Roger Street in Gloucester on the Americold building. And Americold had actually approached us as the Gloucester Arts and Culture Initiative, saying that they would very much like to have some sort of piece of art hanging on their wall there, which is a pretty ugly surface right now. And the Frank Kikowski, who I've been working with at Americold, very much wanted to see it be a community project and really wanted to make sure that various groups like the Chamber of Commerce, the Gloucester Fishermen's Wives Association, the Rose Baker Senior Center, and others were involved. And when I met Leslie, I realized this is the perfect project to put on that wall. And she then aims to work with the community to actually make the tiles which will create the mosaic pieces of the mural, so that she will actually be inviting groups to come in and make tiles. We'll be working with Art Haven and using that as a facility and going out to other facilities, so that, you know, kids from Pathways can come in and make tiles and be part of creating this piece of art for Gloucester. Or, you know, homeless people that go to the Grace Center during the day. But also, you know, school groups, corporate groups, all sorts of organizations can be part of making this mural, which will be the Gloucester story. And then eventually we'll have an unveiling, and it will be a beautiful piece of artwork for Gloucester. So the real idea is for Gloucester to be able to tell its own story through its people and have the community participate in telling that story, creating the visual, and just being able to have pride in something that's beautiful hanging on a wall and will become, you know, something that actually drives tourism for people to come and visit the community. But it's something that will really, you know, grow from the people, as opposed to be something that's, you know, pushed and describes what Gloucester is. So
great. Now, one of the initiatives I saw is working to create a centralized calendar. Can you tell us about that and how it would work, where the platform for it would be, who would do the input, and so forth, and what do you see as the tangible benefits from it?
Well, the tangible benefits is the easiest thing to answer here. Exactly how it's going to take place is under development, and we're exploring that right now. But we hosted a bunch of community forums in April of last year, asking the community what are needs that you think the Gloucester Arts and Culture Initiative could be addressing and helping within the Gloucester community. And a centralized calendar was something that arose without our even asking about it, that a lot of people said, this is something we need. And I think there's a recognition that there are a lot of great calendars in Gloucester, a lot of organizations that are providing information, but there's no one centralized resource. And people are looking for something that will improve awareness of events that are happening, but also attendance, and also for the arts organizations themselves, something where they can coordinate arts and culture events amongst themselves, so you don't have, you know, events that conflict with one another. The idea is to have something like a calendar which the city of Gloucester can then, you know, put on its website. Discover Gloucester for Tourism can have a calendar that they put on their website. And we're looking at something that's very much a model of what's done in Worcester, Massachusetts, where they've got something called the Social Net, which is a place where qualified organizations can post events, and then the calendars are drawn from those postings. What we're doing right now is basically assembling a working group that can assess, you know, what is the practical requirements of putting something like this together, because we do need to know who is going to actually host this calendar. Are we going to hire, you know, this Worcester group to host it? Are we going to have a Gloucester organization that would host it? It's something where there is a lot of work and just sort of awareness raising and participation that would be, you know, required to make it actually work properly.
Great. And we have a few more minutes left.
Okay.
You're involved in some initiatives. One is called Housing Studio and Live Workspace. There is Space Finder Mass. What are those things?
Well, one of the things that was really important in the Gloucester Plan 2000 is the whole idea of serving the artists in the community and making sure that there's living and working space that's affordable, and that Gloucester is a place where that it's welcoming to artists in the community. And one of the things that we've come across is a program called Space Finder Massachusetts, and it's basically an online means of matching available short-term and long-term commercial, industrial, and residential spaces with artists who are seeking space. And it's a platform that already exists and is funded through the Massachusetts Cultural Council, but in order for it to really work in a community, it needs to have people that are posting and looking for space. And so we've been working with the Arts and Business Council in Boston and the Mass Cultural Council to explore the best way of bringing this program to Gloucester. And right now we're working with Sea Arts to have a rollout of the program and have them as a forum to see if there is interest in the community to do this. And there seems to be a lot of interest, and we'd probably be working with the Cape Ann Chamber of Commerce on this as well.
Great. And the housing studio, that's all part of it?
That would be part of it. The other things that we've been looking at is the whole idea of having zoning overlays which enable having live workspace, making it easier in the community. It's something that's been done in Salem and in Beverly, and we're looking at those models and just starting to talk with the city government about what are the actual, you know, zoning ordinances right now and what maybe would need to be changed to increase the ease of having live workspace.
Okay, very well. Well, it seems like you've got quite an agenda in front of you, and wish you the very best. I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and maybe you can come back at a later time and tell us about the progress that you've made.
That'd be great. Thank you, Josh, for the opportunity to get the word out.
Thank you, Martha. Take care. Have a good day.
Great, thanks. Bye. Bye.
Hi, Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
Gloria Food Store is still Beverly's number one deli, and no matter what New England weather is thrown at us, Gloria is open. With fresh bread delivered from Sunray Bakery every morning, Gloria can provide party platters, calzones, hot trays, cold trays, salad trays, and finger sandwiches for whatever you have planned. Call in your order at 978-922-3613, stop in at 268 Rantoul Street, or visit GloriaFoodStore.com.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
NSONewsSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players, exclusive video interviews following the big games, live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball, live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders, mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright Double Hung Insert Window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Honnold, and our next guest is Mark Whitmore. Mark is the Executive Director of North Shore Career Center. Mark, welcome to the program.
Josh, good to be with you this morning.
Well, we usually start out with a little bit of bio and tell us a little bit about your background and family, career, and so forth, and then we'll talk a little bit about some of the work you do.
Great. Well, I'm a lifelong resident of the North Shore. It's given me an opportunity to grow up, learn a lot about the people on the North Shore, and I've gotten a lot back from living on the North Shore, and it's given me an opportunity now in my current position to kind of give back a little bit. I've had the opportunity to serve on some real good boards here on the North Shore. I'm a member of the leadership team of the Greater North Shore Link. Pleased to be a member of the board of the Northeast Arc, and this is my 30th year working in the field of workforce development. So had the opportunity to participate in public education in all my life. Went to the Fitchburg State University, and then on to Northeastern University. So I'm a Massachusetts guy all the way through.
Okay, great. Now, I know the North Shore Career Center has an upcoming event in Gloucester at the Elks on April 5th. Can you tell us a bit about that?
We do. This is the second year that we've done this event, and we're really excited to be able to do this spring event again. It's it is at the Elks, as you mentioned. It's on the 5th of
really
April
loud.
From 1:30 to 3 o'clock.
Okay.
And
okay.
The thing that's exciting about this is it's an opportunity for us to work with the Chamber of Commerce up on the Cape Ann and a lot of good employers that are in the area. We've got about 18 employers that are going to be coming in that day. Broad cross-section of areas from healthcare. We've got Addison Gilbert coming in. We've got Golden Living Center. We have Denmar Health and Rehabilitation Center coming in. Freudenberg Medical is coming in. Then we've also got some folks in the hospitality industry that are going to be there hiring folks. Atlantis Water Oceanfront Inn. One of my all-time favorites, Woodman's, is going to be there. And then we've also got some folks a little bit outside of the Cape Ann area that are going to be coming. As a lot of people know, Whole Foods is going to be opening up in Beverly, and they're sending some folks hoping to find some candidates for some of their future openings. Northeast Arc is coming. So we've got it's a great cross-section. It's everybody's got jobs that they're looking to fill, so for job seekers that are interested in looking for employment, there's both part-time and full-time positions that'll be available. Bring your resume and come for the afternoon. Those that don't have a resume, we can help with that. In addition, we can, if they want to come into one of the Career Center locations, we can help them spiff up their resume before the event.
Great. Now, I know you're involved in a number of activities in your capacity as the executive director, and one of those is creating or helping identify youth summer job opportunities. Tell us about that and how that works.
This is the 13th year. It's hard to believe, but we've been running with the North Shore Workforce Investment Board this collaborative program called First Jobs for 13 years now. This summer of 17 will be our 13th year. And just to give you an example, last summer we were able to find jobs, summer jobs for 600 youth in the area. But the thing that was frustrating, we had 1,500 youth come to us looking for jobs. So it's always a disappointment for us when we can't find enough either private sector employers that are looking for youth for the summer or private nonprofits that were able to sponsor youth to go and work there for the summer. It's a great preparation that we provide to youth. We do help them through a couple of workshops in both job search strategies, and then we're working with the Commonwealth Corporation on a job readiness skills curriculum that is just superb. And it gives youth, and we're talking 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds, a lot of times that this is their first time having an opportunity to work in the competitive labor market. And when you think back to any of our first jobs and the things that we learned and the sort of, you know, probably dumb things that we all did early in our career, this is the time to learn those kind of things, and having employers be willing to take a chance with a young person helps them to really invest in that emerging workforce, and they're going to be our workforce of the future. So the sooner we can get them in and have them learn employer expectations and what the labor market's all about, the better workforce we're going to have for the future. So we're always looking for businesses that are willing to either hire or support a youth for the summer, and they can go to our website and learn more about the summer jobs program.
Great. Now, what are some of the challenges as well as opportunities you see in your daily work in terms of the job market?
Well, a couple of the things that we're still struggling with right now, and they're very different than the struggles we had in the height of the recession. Right now, we're actually seeing employers, businesses coming to us, and they're struggling with the disconnect between the skills and talents that they're looking for and the existing skills that exist among those in the job market. So trying to fill those, we've got motivated job seekers and we've got motivated employers, but there's a disconnect between those skills. There's a gap in those skills that exist. And that's one of the things that we try to do is work within our partner members, whether it be adult education, whether it be voc rehab, whether it be our partners in the transitional assistance world, looking at the various programs that each one of us have got and try to make some sense of those so that we can fill those skill gaps for our area employers and make sure that we're continuing to send them good employees because we want them to be happy so that they can stay here and do well so that everybody on the North Shore does well.
And what are the characteristics of that gap? Is it something that's for example is it that the industry, a particular industry, has changed in a way that the skills have been upgraded? Is it more technologically advanced so that the gap is that they need people who have a broader technology basis background or a broader manufacturing background that perhaps they didn't have? Or is it more a function of, the demand that we have is in these industries and the supply that we have is in different industries and they're not easily to cross over?
Yeah. Great observation. It's some of it is both. Certainly that whole technology gap, as companies automate more of their functions – and integrate more technology into their regular day-in, day-out practices, that requires a specific set of technology skills. And a lot of us, particularly those that are individuals that are in, have been in transition from the recession, may not have had the kind of strength in those technology skills that the businesses are looking for in the current labor market. So that's a huge piece of it, that technology piece, but it's also replacement of positions. For example, I'll give you an example of manufacturing. So many people have the impression that manufacturing is a dying industry, and in some places perhaps it is, but I'll be honest with you, in our region, and really in the northeast portion of Massachusetts, that's not the case. We're durable goods manufacturing is considered one of the critical growth industries for us in our region, primarily because if you think of the people that are in manufacturing, a lot of them are beginning to age out. They're baby boomers that are coming to the end of their career, and they're looking to move on to the next stages in their life, but they're hanging tough because there hasn't been a good pipeline of individuals coming up behind them. So our Workforce Investment Board has worked with the other Workforce Investment Boards in this region, up in Lawrence, over in Lowell, down in Cambridge, because all of us are suffering the same problem. Where as that bubble of baby boomers moves through, it's leaving a void. And those kinds of skills aren't skills that you can always pick up readily on the job. It requires strong math skills. It requires statistical process control skills. It working on CNC machines. Just a lot of skills that we just normally don't have unless we've received that kind of training. Well, our workforce boards in this region have worked together to create a collaborative with our community colleges and our Volk schools to begin to reintroduce those curriculum into being able to have adults and older youth begin to transition into those fields. So
how difficult that's
go ahead, Josh.
It's an interesting point. I guess the question that comes to mind is how difficult is that to do in the context of getting public education or, you know, for example, the North Shore Tech, do they have a manufacturing program there? And how long does it take to get one up and running if they don't have one?
We're lucky. The investments at Essex Tech have been recent, and as a result, there is a manufacturing, there is a machining program at Essex Tech, and it's a good one. And one of the things that we've been working with the folks at Essex Tech to include them in the North Shore projects as North Shore Community Colleges. We do our cycles here in the area. Essex Tech, Lynn Vocational Technical Institute, and Peabody High School have all been involved in those projects with us. But if you don't have the investment, a CNC machine is hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
So for public education to make that kind of investment without participation from the private sector is probably pretty remote. It's, you know, we're all familiar with how tight education budgets are, and to make that kind of an investment within the publicly funded budget is a really tough proposition to make.
Sure. Great. Now, explain a little bit about the origins of your organization that you direct, it's, and the mission, and tell us a little bit about the geography that you encompass, and as well as so much multifaceted, multi-part questions. But it, and also, I know you have offices not just in Salem, but other places. Can you tell us a little about that too?
Absolutely. We actually started as part of a federal enabling legislation. So back in 1999, I'll say, and it's probably 98, but in that range, the late 90s, the Workforce Investment Act was created, and it created a system of one-stop career centers, not just across Massachusetts, but across the United States. And the whole idea was to create America's job centers so that job seekers and businesses could go into these locations and get the kind of help that they needed in finding employers that need workers, and for businesses to go in and find the kind of candidates that, that they need to fill their jobs. So that was begun during that period. Well, those piece of landmark legislation that was passed a couple of years ago called the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, or WIOA, and that succeeded our original enabling legislation. We were a little nervous because you never know whether the legislature continues to find the value in locally supported workforce boards and the creation of these America's job centers across the country. Well, they did. Both the House and the Senate saw that as two critical pieces, that keeping decision-making on how workforce training funds get spent at the local level so that our region, our local region, is 19 cities and towns. It starts in Saugus and Lynn in the south, and goes up to Rockport and Gloucester. So it's those 19 cities and towns. If you run a line up Route 1 and everything east of Route 1 falls into our 19 city and town region. And our Workforce Investment Board, Mary Saris runs the Workforce Investment Board. We've got a terrific set of board members, the private sector folks that help us to make decisions about where to invest those workforce dollars. We work with a whole host of partners from, you'd mentioned, vocational ed, but it also includes adult education, it includes vocational rehabilitation, it includes transitional assistance, working with mature workers, creating an environment that helps to prepare our workforce to take the jobs that that businesses have. And how we do that locally is really through a series of, we have one full-service center, which is in Salem. We have two access points where we've got staff outstationed 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday, at both North Shore Community College, the campus in Lynn, and over at the Family Success Center in Lynn. So we've got staff that are outstationed there. We also have staff 4 days a week at our access point at Action Inc. in up in Gloucester, and we've got a wonderful relationship with our partners at Action, and help them with marketing the programs that they run in the community, but they also work with us as far as helping to find youth and adults job opportunities. One of the other kind of cool things that we've started over the past couple of years has been some relationships with public libraries. And we do, every other Friday, we do a job seeker networking group over at the Peabody Institute Library in Danvers. And we also do a workshop series with the Peabody Institute Library in Peabody on Thursday afternoons. So it's a way for us to get out and meet folks that would not otherwise be able to get into our one of our other locations.
What are some of the services folks visiting career centers utilize?
A lot of job seekers come in, and the first thing that they want to know is, okay, I need a job. Where are you going to send me? And we can help them find job leads. We work with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in who's built a terrific, really robust job search tool called JobQuest. And that tool actually scrapes job leads off of other web boards. We also have a business team that works with our area companies to look at job leads, and those job leads get put into JobQuest as well. So job leads is a big issue, but just as large an issue that our job seekers are looking for is they're looking for help with resume development. They're looking for help with resume, with interview prep. They're looking for help with how do I market myself? How do I, all the talk about social media, how do I utilize things like tools like LinkedIn in my job search? So we have the opportunity to run workshops in hands-on in our computer lab so that job seekers get a chance to come in, set up their profile in LinkedIn, learn how to prospect companies in LinkedIn and do their research. One of the biggest mistakes that people make is they don't research the company that they're going in to meet with.
Yeah, no, it's true. I was a headhunter years ago, and I had Arnold Career Services, and I would tell people there isn't the more I know about you, the better chance I have about of helping you find a job. And the same thing with the company. The more I know about the company, the better chance I have of finding the right candidate for you.
Right.
And it's a two-way street, but it's you almost can't ever do enough homework. And you know, back in the day, there was a tendency to say, all right, well, what are you looking for? And it wasn't simply a match on job, but there were other characteristics that I try to counsel folks with. Are you looking for a family-friendly company? Are you looking for somebody, a place where you're going to be there 12, 15 hours a day, but, you know, they're going to send out for pizza, they play foosball and you know, other stuff there, but you're going to spend a good part of your day there. You know, what is the turnover rate? You know, the position that you're applying for, is it something, how often does it turn over and why? I mean, those are the kinds of things that are relevant in a job search. So it's I applaud your note about research and so forth. And as far as LinkedIn goes, I have to tell you, when that first came into being, one of my candidates told me about it, and I signed on. You know, I don't know how many years ago, but I have probably, you know, 11. Nearing 12,000 level one contacts, and people seek me out as a contact. They want to be part of my network because it builds their network. You know, so I don't know all of those people, but I have a connection to them. But the amount, and what I've told people over the years is, think of LinkedIn as your free infomercial, your free, you know, advertisement to put yourself out there. And there are so many, and this software has become more sophisticated, so there's so many ways of angling in. So if you take the set of all people who attend Fitchburg State University, you list that, and someone's going to hone in there and say, oh, I wonder who else is. There's so many ways of looking at things through that forum that there are lots of opportunities that come up, and they have their own jobs system there as well.
They do, and so many of those leads, those first tier leads that you were talking about, it's an opportunity to have those people introduce you to other people, and it's really virtual networking. It's the opportunity to make sure that people know that you're looking for a job, whether it's maybe your next job, or whether it's have people learn about you from some of the things that you post on LinkedIn.
Yeah,
it's a dynamic tool, and it's one that has made a huge difference in this recovery for a lot of our job seekers.
You know, back in the day before there was LinkedIn, before Al Gore invented the internet, I'm sorry, I always have to say that, but actually the internet was invented long before Al Gore took credit for it. But anyway, I had one of my professors in my undergrad work told us this neat thing, and he said, when you're looking at the Boston Globe or any newspaper and they have the business goings on and so-and-so got promoted to, you know, executive vice president or vice president or treasurer, whatever it is, doesn't matter what it is, send them a congratulatory letter. Snail mail, send them a congratulatory letter and send and say, you know, I don't know you, but I saw it and I wanted to congratulate you. And if there were ever an opening that you think that I could fit for, I'd appreciate some consideration and you conclude your resume. He says, the other thing to do is take in the upper right-hand corner, put a check mark on the resume. And he said, in larger organizations, you get a vice president, and the vice president doesn't necessarily, I mean, it may not be on a daily dialogue with the person that's handling the resumes in the human resource department. So they just forward it down with a little note from their office in the interdepartment mail, and the personnel person gets it, and they would put it in the file, but you might get preferential treatment because that person assumes that you're connected to the vice president.
There you go.
And it was really, I don't know if that works today, but it seemed to be popular enough that the professor shared it with us. And there were lots of different approaches. One of the things I used to tell people is, you know, if you want, reach out to somebody and say, I know you don't have any openings, but could I steal 20 minutes of your time just to kind of help guide me? And you know, if you, some people will do that. And, and that'll get, that's kind of getting your foot in the door. I used to tell people, they would say, you'd hear the adage, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Who you know, yeah.
And I would say, you know what? It's both. Yeah. What you know, I mean, who you know may get you in the door, but if you don't carry yourself well, if you don't, you know, you haven't done the research and you don't have something good, value added to bring to the equation, doesn't matter who you know, most times that's not going to be enough to carry the day.
Exactly. And it is interesting because it truly is that both pieces of the equation. It's an interesting phenomenon that we've seen through that whole recession period. Job boards like Monster and Idealist and all of these really grew during that period, and to the point where companies became inundated with so many responses to postings that they couldn't possibly get look at all of them. And what winds up happening is they wind up looking at internal referral process. So we're seeing, as we build relationships with companies, we're seeing more and more companies that have an internal employee referral process. So just what you were talking about that check mark on
yeah.
the top corner of the resume, that's come back into vogue. So understanding who the people in your contact network and where they work, and perhaps they know somebody else that could refer you as a candidate to the company that they work in. So
there are lots of, you know, and one of the things that LinkedIn provides is that you can, who else did that person look at?
Right.
You know, so, you know, you call up Josh Arnold and, well, who else, you know, if you called me up, but who else had, you know, was checking, you know, out my background? And I get those, I don't have the premium membership, but the free one, and the, you know, you find out who was checking you out, and, you know, it'll say, three people from such and such a company, or you know, someone so and so anonymously, but from this industry, which is helpful, and you constantly get the can you refer me to so and so, and I would just tell folks too. That there's value in responding to the network prompts that you get from LinkedIn. So somebody has a birthday, somebody has a new job, somebody has an anniversary, send them a quick note. Doesn't take long. You do that at the end of your day just to, you know, or how you start your day or whatever, depending on how big your network is. But just wish them well. You never know where that leads.
It's true. Building your network. You can't build your network when you need it. You need to build it before you need it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be part of what you do on an ongoing basis. I have a little bit more time. I want to get into the issue of underemployment versus unemployment. And I know when they give the unemployment statistics, they base that on folks who are collecting unemployment assistance. So the people who are unemployed but aren't collecting a benefit through the government are not included in that figure.
True.
At the same time, I remember years ago when I did headhunting, the article talking about that America had the most educated taxi drivers in the world. And because in recessionary times, you'd have a PhD, somebody was going to med school, but they're driving a taxi to make it work. And
yeah, now they drive an Uber.
Yeah, 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 right. There you go. And so, in the context of your profession, tell us about the unemployment and the underemployment and the challenges that creates for you.
Yes. You gave a great characterization of the unemployment rate. It's really the total of the labor force that's really out of work, but they're actively seeking and willing to go to work. So if you think of that unemployment group as really a pretty defined cohort of people, the folks that you were talking about the discouraged worker, somebody that hasn't looked for work in previous 3 weeks, when the Bureau of Labor Statistics does the survey, which is a relatively small sample for the country, and they find individuals that haven't looked for work in the previous 3-4 weeks, they're taken out of that unemployment equation, and they fall into that discouraged worker category. Well, right now Massachusetts is got a real strong unemployment rate. We're at 3.8%. It's a full percentage point better than it was a year ago. And if you think of our region, our 19 cities and towns here on the North Shore, we've got about 230,000 people in the labor market that are working, eligible to work here on the North Shore. So we've got 3.8% of those people that are in that category of actively seeking work and are willing to go to work. A lot of times the Bureau of Labor Statistics also does another look at that unemployment rate, and they refer to that as the underemployment rate. And that falls into folks that they group up people that are not searching for jobs in that past previous 4 weeks. They also include people that are working part-time but might want to be working full-time.
Okay.
And it also includes those people that you were talking about that are in occupations that don't fit with the industry that they were trained to go into.
Great.
So those folks fall into that underemployment rate. And a lot of times they see Bureau of Labor Statistics will gauge that at anywhere from 12 to 13% as it stands as of January. So
great. Want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. We have to call it a day, but it was certainly a very good interview, and lots of information to share, and maybe we can have you back as we approach the summer months, and you can tell us a little bit about some of the jobs programming that you're working with.
Happy to do that, Josh.
Great, Mark. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
All righty, that'll do it. What do you got for next week?
We have Joanne Simon, Executive Director of Northeast ARC, and we have someone else from the golf tournament that's coming up, the Senior Open. And we've reached out to a number of people. I saw somebody, Dr. Claudia Luiz is the author of Where's My Sanity? And that looked like interesting. We're going to try
to... Good Harbor Beach somewhere.
Huh?
It's Good Harbor Beach, I think, is the answer to that.
Yeah, well, anyway, she may be a guest in May, and then we have several other people that we're talking to.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Josh. Okay, that'll do it for Trending Now. I'm Rick Moore, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Have a great weekend.